All right, go from there. This is your host, Trevante Jaramillo. I got to admit, I'm a little bit mentally worn out. My last guest before who I've got with me tonight was semi-famous and pretty much super hated on the internet. And I've been fending off haters and just, dealing with all that kind of stuff. Like, stuff that, you know, a guy that's trying to be a beacon of positivity doesn't usually deal with, but apparently it's probably good timing because this one might be a similar situation. I'm with Steve and Tony Ingram. Big time, well, obviously big local story, but is becoming, you know, more and more national with, you know, more and more exposure that it gets. Basically, we're talking about stalking, murder, well, a dead daughter. That's the biggest thing we're talking about. I don't know if where I'm at with all that. So, but I want you guys to break it down and we'll see what we come up with.
That's fair.
Let me have you get a tiny bit closer. Sorry. I might even have you hold that stupid thing because I don't know. I need better booms.
Okay. Right,
there you go. I did want to start with, like, because to be honest, I don't know how I missed this. I didn't know about any of it until I saw it on Facebook with the blog. So I want to go, you know, way before everything happened, like,
very
maybe
easy
maybe like
to
the
miss.
couple years. Well, yeah, apparently
very easy miss. Morgan was actually born at Valley View Hospital. We had a ranch in Old Snowmass a long time ago, and she was the youngest of three children. We thought, moving from Los Angeles, I grew up with Charles Manson, with Richard Ramirez, the who just died, all the bad, horrible stories you hear about. And I grew up, you know, and people were afraid back then, and they locked their windows, and everyone tried to make sure that their kids were safe, and they didn't play outside, and all that kind of stuff. So we moved to Colorado and into this valley, which was gorgeous, and we thought it was so safe. People didn't even lock their cars back then.
What time frame are we talking?
Well, we originally moved in the 70s. And then, and we built our ranch in the 80s. So it was a different time back then.
Yeah. I mean, I was also born at Valley View, lived here my whole life. And, I mean, it's quite different, you know?
It's quite different.
Obviously it would be, but.
Now, our oldest daughter fell in love with New York when she went to New York to go to college. And she fell in love with the city and the fast pace and didn't want to come back to Colorado. And our second oldest was a son, and he was in love. He was a hockey player, but he was in love with the out of doors. And so he loved it here. Right. And so he settled here. And then Morgan was our youngest, a lot younger than the other two.
How'd you guys meet?
High school.
Yeah.
High school party.
Party in high school.
Really? Wow.
We were 15 years old when we met.
Jesus.
Yeah.
And a long road, right, huh?
Oh, yeah.
And Morgan was a whoopsie baby. We didn't realize we were going to have her. We had the first two, and she was 10 years younger than our youngest.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So she was a surprise, but we were so thrilled to have her.
It's like a birthday thing? What's up?
close. Have an anniversary. Yeah.
There is a story to it.
There is a story to it.
Well, bring it.
No, we don't need to bring it.
All right, fair enough.
Morgan hated the story.
I know. We tried to tell it all the time, but she said, no. Well, anyway.
I want to know now. Is it really? No?
No, it was just, I was surprised. I was on birth control pills, and I got pregnant with her. And I actually was pregnant with twins, and I lost one of them.
Oh, okay.
So, and I thought I was going to lose her, but I didn't. And she was born at Valley View and by a midwife, and it was great, you know, and so it was kind of a surprise to the whole family to have a little one around, but right. it was great. We had horses and we had all kinds of animals. So she grew up around animals and loved them, and she loved the out of doors. And she ended up becoming a fabulous photographer, artist. She was very artsy and
a lot of creative stuff.
And she loved philosophy. That was her major, was philosophy and school. She loved just learning, basically. She just loved to learn. So she was a different kind of a person. She wasn't like our older two who were into sports and all that other stuff. She was really into animals and quiet and meditating and yoga and taking pictures of things and helping people. She helped people to the extent that I thought it was bad. You know, she tried to help people that I thought were a little sketchy at times, but didn't matter to her.
That's a weird trait to have, you know, because I know a lot of people that are...
Do you?
They're more... No, I wouldn't say a lot. I know a few people that are so, like, benefit of the doubt, you know, second chances, third chances. It's like,
right.
Because I'm not like that.
I'm not like that either, but she certainly
No, she
was.
Had a solution for everyone, and she wanted to help everyone.
If somebody was on drugs, she wanted to help them get off drugs. If somebody was dropping out of
school. Why do you think
school,
that was, though? Like, what?
Why she was like that? Yeah. I have no idea. I mean, she was so different.
We didn't help anyone. I don't know where she
different.
Got that shit.
I mean, I was just, I grew up in an era where you're leery of people, you know, and she was just so open. And maybe it was because she was raised here and not in Los Angeles. That could have been.
Yeah.
I really don't know what the answer is to that one. But she was just a really kind, loving soul. Everyone thought she was an old soul from when she was a baby. I mean, she would eat raw oysters when she was, what, three years old? We'd go to a restaurant, and she'd be popping raw oysters, and people were looking at us like we're strange. So she was definitely different. Anyway, so she went to school here. She loved the mountains. She told me many, many times she knew she was going to have to go away to school, and she really wanted, believe it or not, she went the spring before the stalking started, she went with her sister to work on a movie. Her sister works on movies, and to work on a movie in San Francisco. And so she flew out there by herself, and she worked on this movie with her sister, and she wanted to go to Stanford to check it out. So she went up to Stanford with her sister and fell in love with it and came home with all this Stanford paraphernalia and said, this is where I'm going. And I said, do you realize how hard it is to get into Stanford? I don't know about this. And she said, you know, if I want to do it, I can do it. And it was true. If she wanted to do something, she could do it. So that was her goal, was to get into Stanford.
Nice.
So that was kind of what happened beforehand. She had just finished.
What was she going to go do? The philosophy?
She was going to do a philosophy major, but she was going to go to law school. And she wanted to be a woman's lawyer, an advocate for women's rights.
Women's rights.
Which blew me away. I didn't even realize it until I read her diary and what she was writing down about it and what percentage. This is what she would do. She had a whole page about what grade point average she needed, what she needed on her test scores in order to equal out, in order to get accepted. So she had everything all written down and all planned out. So that's what happened. And then she came back. She had just finished her 2 years of college here at CMC and with her AA degree. And she was going to go to CU Boulder, finish her last 2 years, and then try to take the LSATs and get into college. So that was the plan. But then we went on vacation. We took her with us. She had just gotten back from LA, and we took her with us. We got back. She got a little puppy on the way home, her first puppy of her own. She'd always had many, many animals, but never her own puppy. We had a dog, but not hers. And she just loved it to death. We brought it over to Crystal River Meats over here in Carbondale. And she wanted to buy with her own money, you know, organic beef and make her own dog food. I mean, this is the kind of person she was. So she was very dedicated to that little puppy. And 2 days after she got the puppy, the stalking started, although we didn't know the stalking had started 2 days after we returned. She was kind of keeping it from us for a few days.
You're going to have to give me the background on trying to decide if names need to be, like, what do you think?
I don't think we need to name names. I think basically I want to raise awareness, and I want this valley to know what's going on and what's being hidden too. I mean, it's very, very critical that stalking victims be taken seriously, that they be acted upon quickly, and that the law enforcement, whoever the law enforcement is, knows what to do and knows how to handle it, because it can be handled.
There's part of me that, like, I mean, I really want to, like, light every bit of this up, because I have, you guys don't know this, but I have my own issues with law enforcement around here.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like it might be in all of our best interest to just leave names out. You know, if you want to go first names, I don't really give a shit. But
it doesn't matter. We don't have to name names, but I really think that the important parts need to be touched upon, which is what law enforcement's doing and not doing. I think that's very critical, because there's so many stalking victims from all over the world that have contacted me from different countries. We're in 115 countries on our website, this is a lot. Which is,
I'm in three. I need to get
I don't know how.
Maybe you guys can help me out.
I don't know how we ended up in 115, but I think because stalking is a huge thing.
It's a chord. It definitely hits with women. They're stalked more than anyone. You see the statistics, and they talk about men get stalked, but I think it's the movie stars. I think it's people like that. I think women are, they bear the brunt of stalking. Well, and when Morgan's stalking began, I don't think she was really trying to keep it from us. I think she thought she was trying to minimize, there was a noise on her window. And she thought it was a tree branch scraping against her window. That was the simplest thing. But it freaked her out still. You know, she
well, that would speak to her attitude of, like, you know, benefit of the doubt. Like, why would somebody do this to me? Like, there's no, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, her helpful attitude would be like, no, it's got to be a tree branch. Like, who would come and be acting weird around here?
There you go. You know? Couldn't be a person. It had to be something inanimate.
Right.
Yeah.
That's weird. Yeah, like we talked the first time we got on the phone. There's no, like, that one's not that bad. Like, they're all scary as shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, every story you hear, like there might be somewhere like, a guy followed me home once. Okay, that's not that bad. But if it's, like, continual, like, mm-hmm. It's always horrific.
And that's the whole thing, is you have to trust your intuition. If the hairs on the back of your neck go up, you know something's wrong. And you have to trust that intuition. Your brain is telling you, don't be ridiculous. That person's not looking at you, or that person's not following you. And those are the people that end up dead. I mean, you have got to trust your gut, because deer trust it, fox trust it, coyotes trust it. I mean, it's just something
point.
We have.
Yeah.
But people don't. We kind of pull away from that. You
Wasn't
know?
It weird? Like, that's another thing that, like, okay, me and another friend were talking about something a little different, but, you know, kind of trades paint with it. Like, you know how they always say, like, you know, something happens and it's always like, well, he was nice, you know, and we never saw anything. And then, like let's say, you know, the Aurora shooter, the psychiatrist that evaluated him said, no, there's something up with this guy. And she actually did say something, right? Like, she didn't, but it was ignored or whatever.
She like, told, right, Morgan, you mean?
No. Oh,
the psychiatrist or psychologist?
Whoever it was that, yeah, talked to Holmes. And
She did
say something, right? Mm-hmm. And it was ignored. But,
yes.
Like, that's the thing. Like, at least she said something.
Right.
Now, you know, her conscience should be clean, hopefully. I'm sure it gets at her a little bit, but she did the right thing. It is weird that, you know, so many people, I don't know if it's just because they don't want to, like, start shit or, you know, have problems with somebody. But
they
don't say anything.
They hold it in. They don't say anything. And that's a big thing that has to change. People have to know they have to say something. Let me tell you a really tiny little story. Back in June, last June, Father's Day, was when we started the blog, right?
Right.
Not knowing what we were doing, have no idea of social media. But Morgan, before she died, we were talking about something else going on in the world politics. And she was saying, people have to realize social media is a huge thing nowadays. I didn't get what she was saying.
Now, real quickly, let's say morganingram.com is the blog, right?
It's morganingram.com or morganstalking.com. Either one gets you there.
Okay.
And we are starting the Morgan Ingram Foundation, and that should be coming out soon, too.
Okay. I just wanted to get that out in case this goes for 2 hours before we say anything.
There you
so.
Go. Pretty much if you Google Morgan Ingram, you'll get to some part of the website.
But anyway, right. Immediately when I started the blog, I started having all kinds of people from all over the place write into me. And one woman wrote into me, and it still today really hits a chord with me because it's such a local situation. She went down, her son played soccer at Willits. And we know where Willits is in Basalt, by where the Whole Foods is now.
Right.
So all the kids were out there playing soccer, and all the parents were sitting there watching. And she said she saw this man off to the distance staring at the boys. She didn't recognize him. So after reading my blog, she did something she normally wouldn't have done. She decided to be proactive or hyper-vigilant or hyper-proactive or active. And so she went over and she asked all the other parents, do you know that person? Do you know that person? No one knew him. So she told her husband, instead of doing it herself, she said, go over there and find out what boy he's attached to and what's his deal.
What's he doing here,
yeah, what's his deal? So her husband walked over there and said, hi, my name is blah, blah, blah. What's your name? Who are you here to see? And the guy took off running. Now, scared the heck out of all those parents.
Jesus, yeah.
But it taught them all a lesson. And the lesson was, if they had not paid attention that he was there, and they all saw him, but they just didn't pay attention because politically correct, I guess if you're being politically correct, you wouldn't ask that question, right? And that's what we're all trained to be, is politically correct.
To me, that would be the situation where you would be so like, what? Who the fuck is anybody
yeah,
that guy?
Yeah,
what's he doing
now
here?
I
like,
would say that
if
too.
If your kids are out right. there, like if you're in a bar with, you know, grown up friends, you know, who's that guy? Like,
well,
maybe, but I would think like, whatever. If he keeps walking around, then yeah. But like at a soccer field with all your
right.
kids, like no,
watching the boys
yeah,
run
so
around.
So this group of parents immediately came to the conclusion that they would all leave. There would be some kid there whose mom or dad got hung up on the way there. He was going to be 2 or 3 minutes late, and they could never see their son again.
Yeah, who knows?
Right. And that's how close it comes, and that's how easy it happens. So they were very thankful.
Yeah. And that's just one little story. I mean, I've had so many stories. I've had so many horrific stories. I've had people from all different countries. A woman from India recently, you know, contacted me and didn't know what to do. And I said, I have no idea. I'm not.
Why would they bother
India.
In India? Like, they're freely abuse women over there, right?
Yeah, and that's what she told me. She explained that to me. And she said this older man was getting and he looked like he was going to get violent. She didn't know what to do. She's in the city. Her family's in the country. And I said, you know what? I don't even know what to tell you. All I can say at this point, if you can't find anybody to help you, is try to see if your parents will take you in for a little while till you can get a handle on who this guy is and get him caught or do something or move somewhere where he can't find you. She did. She emailed me back after a month, and she said, thank you so much. I can sleep at night now. My mother's watching over me. I'm getting my life together, and I'm not going back there. I mean,
I wonder what happened.
Imagine?
I wonder if he was taken care of with a fucking sickle or something like that.
Who knows? But, I mean, there's so many strange stories. But, I mean, that's what we're trying to do. Not only...
Well, hang on. We'll get to the cause here in a minute. What started happening?
So what started happening is that, I guess, it started for her on a Tuesday. And by Friday night, she told us about it. And she was very upset.
Yeah, and it's been happening all week. I've been hearing this noise on my window. I'm sure it's just a branch on a tree. It's a bush.
Right.
If you could just trim it back, Dad, the noise will be gone. Everything will be over.
Right.
So we were so cavalier about the whole thing. We said, okay, it's late now. Tomorrow morning, Saturday morning, we'll go out there and I'll trim it back. So the three of us walked around the corner, and it's one of those moments you will never forget in your life. Walked around the corner of the house, looked at her bedroom windows, and there was nothing within 10 feet of her bedroom windows.
Yeah. She had a
plants, no anything. We're looking at each other.
Right.
What the heck's going on now?
Bathroom window and two bedroom windows, and there were no plants even close. Even if the wind blew, they wouldn't have hit it. So we got very upset and nervous. So
well, what did she think about that?
She got very upset and nervous. Then she started thinking somebody's messing with her. Right. And so then she said, and I said, okay, promise me next time it happens, just let me know so I can deal with it right then and there. And we just got a baseball bat, and we thought we'd run outside and deal with the person. And so it happened again, but we ran out there. No, but we couldn't catch the person. And then... So that was on a Saturday. Now it's Saturday. Now nothing happened Sunday, I think. And then Monday, I went to a meeting. I came home. Everything was fine. We thought we were going to have a good night. We thought maybe this was over. Because stalking victims think that. They think it's always over. They always think, no matter what. For 4 months, we kept thinking, it's almost over. It's going to be over. You know, that's just one of the things to keep your brain sane. You keep thinking that. But anyway.
Well, there must be like a rule behind that. Like, what is it? Do you know?
Well, I mean, I've read all these stalking things, and they said it's a normal reaction. I didn't know that back then, but I do know that now, that is one of the normal reactions.
Yeah, since the beginning of Morgan stalking, not guys that I would come in contact with during the day at work, but women that I would come in contact with, I would tell them the story of Morgan stalking, and every single one of them in this valley had been stalked. And you could see on their face, it was... You know, post-traumatic stress, it affected them still 10, 20, 30 years later. And that's when I started to really get how big this was a really big thing.
And after Morgan died, we actually moved into a new house. And then I had my computer person come out, who was a female, to hook everything up. Hadn't told her anything about Morgan or what we were doing. And she saw something of Morgan's and asked me a question. And that's when I broke down and told her. And she broke down crying. And she said she had been stalked for 13 years.
Jesus.
She, over state lines, this guy had actually broken into her house and busted all her memorabilia. And the way it stopped was she was actually dating a sheriff's officer, but it wasn't an officer. He worked as a desk job. But he had carried a gun on him. Mm-hmm. And he was over for dinner one night. And this stalker actually came banging on her front door. And she opened it. And he got right in front of her face and started threatening her. And this guy, next thing she knows, this guy had a gun right in this guy's face.
Yeah.
And said, don't you ever. And she hasn't seen him since. Now, there's so many different stories. But so many people have them we realize that this is a big thing. And we really need to change the way law enforcement deals with stalking victims and deals with the stalkers in order to save people.
Right. So this is kind of the part where I know some of the stuff that was going on. It was basically like you know, people hanging around the house, like cars driving by. Then you guys started getting cameras and like motion sensors and all that type of stuff. Like, how long did the actual thing like go?
4 months, exactly, exactly. We actually, that first night that we called the sheriff's was that Monday, after I told you that Saturday, we went and saw there was no branches on our windows. That Monday, she went to use my bathroom instead of her bathroom because she was so creeped out because, you know, we saw footprints. So she went to use my bathroom, and the window was open about an inch, and she had taken her clothes off already, but it was an obscured window. So she got a creepy feeling, rolled the window up, and just the person hit the window so hard, she jumped out of her skin. She just grabbed her towel and ran screaming through the house. And so we called the police.
Yeah, so now she knows it's a person. She's dressed in a towel, screaming and shaking in the house. We called the police. And this was the beginning of what would happen for the next 4 months. We would call the police, and they would show up. 15 minutes would be fast. A half hour, 45 minutes later. There'd be a five-minute little party they do or tea dance out in their car. Then they would come to the front door. Then we would walk around the house with their flashlight. And
then they would leave. They could give us their card. And then
now, as I sit here and I know how it ended, it was so ridiculous how we responded to what was going on.
Right.
But it was like there was nothing going on. It was like you don't have to take this seriously.
Well, like the way that you would let it just kind of lollygag, you mean?
Yes. Yeah, well, like it was going to end. We didn't really have to do anything. There was no...
Oh, okay.
So
there was no, like, urgency and, like, let's just walk around the house when we get to it or whatever.
It became painfully obvious to us that it was up to us to solve this if we were ever going to catch this person. And we know nothing about stalking.
And the sheriff came out, and they saw the footprints, and they said, look at this. His footprints are right up against the edge of your house, the wall of your house, and his nose has got to be right up against your window. You can see that. And he goes, I'm going to call up and see if I could take a casting. So he calls up the main office, and they tell him no until it's a felony stalking, and there's a detective assigned. You're not allowed to take fingerprints or stalking or castings. So Steve took pictures of the footprints. But to me, that's like crazy. That's nuts. That's not what you do.
Yeah,
I said
we can't just do nothing. So I took pictures of the footprints, put them on a little jump drive, and I said, here, take the jump drive.
Right.
Put it in your evidence. I'll go buy 100 jump drives. That's not a problem. And that's basically, we started doing that. Every piece of evidence I had was electronic. I'd load it onto a jump drive, and I'd give it to the sheriffs when they came by.
Right.
We were at a family gathering a month after it started in Steamboat Springs.
Right.
And we were all, the subject was the stalking. And everyone kicking back and forth said, get a wildlife camera. That's the thing to do. So on the way home, you pass by Walmart, I go in, maybe they'll have one. Sure enough, they did. We came home that night. I think it was late.
That night, you know, it was late.
So it was either that night or the next night that I just went out, and there was a hook that we used to put Christmas decorations on, and I hung it on the front of the house.
In the entry, in the very front of the outside.
And sure enough, there was a stalking incident. And the stalking incidents were always knocking, banging, something on the window, something outside, scraping
pushing
noise.
Pushing the door code on our front door like he was trying to enter. Mm-hmm. Just all kinds of things like that. Or showing up one time. Morgan will let her puppy out to go potty at 5 or 5:30 in the morning. Still pitch blackout. She got a creepy feeling again. She was very intuitive. And she put the long lead on the puppy that I had put by the back door along with a flashlight and pepper spray and everything else because we were very paranoid at that point. And so she put the long lead on the puppy, opened the slider. The puppy ran out to go potty, and all of a sudden she looks up, and within 10 feet of her is this guy dressed all in black, in pitch black in the morning, in her backyard, right by our barbecue. And so she just took in a breath and grabbed the line and just yanked the puppy back in and locked the sliding glass door, took the puppy, ran into our bedroom and sat down on the floor, just collapsed on the floor against the wall with her puppy in her lap, just staring at the door and just shaking. And it was awful, and we called the sheriffs on that one too. So he did lots of stuff, and he followed her too, and she did ID him.
He had a different attitude when he was in a car, and I've been reading a few different books on stalking just very recently. And it's a very common thing for stalkers that they become more and more brave as the stalking goes on, and they'll start to show themselves. Now, he never showed himself around the house, quote unquote. If we got a picture or we have an image or we have video surveillance of him around the house, it was an accident. something happened where he got flushed out by a car. There was an incident where a neighbor's car is coming up the street. Now he's sort of stuck. If he doesn't jump out from behind the car, he's going to get caught in the headlights of our neighbor coming up the street. So we've got him in that instant where he jumps up from behind the car and runs across the driveway.
And 4:30 in the morning, I heard a noise. I was sitting on the couch in pitch blackness in the house, front porch lights on, and I see a figure run up to the front door in a hoodie and go to punch the numbers in the door like had been happening. And he saw me right when I saw him, and he turned to the left, took off, knocked the alarm, the motion alarm off the tree where we had it stationed, and Steve took off after him, but of course couldn't catch him. So there were a lot of different things that were going on.
So go ahead.
This is kind of a weird question, but like obviously, like if you're telling me you saw it, I'm not gonna say that. Do you think that like in her, like the fear and the paranoia was like growing, and like do you think she ever saw something that maybe wasn't there?
No.
I think it was the opposite of that. I think there was many times that she heard things or saw things and she refused to tell us because she wanted us to have a few nights sleep. It's like every single time this guy would come, anytime between 10 p.m. and let's say 6 a.m., we weren't getting any sleep. Because by the time we called the officers, they finally came to the house, they interviewed us, they checked the whole neighborhood, then they interview us again, and then they finally leave, and then we'd have to try to go back to sleep, and we were exhausted.
If he came by at 10 or 2, those were favorite times, we'd be up for the next 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah.
So you know, after a month of that, you're exhausted.
Are you a firearm guy?
No, firearms. He's not, I am.
No, but I was given many firearms on loan during this, and we had them. We had loaded shotguns under the bed.
Here's one thing an investigator asked us from Washington, D.C. He said, why in the world did you meet your daughter out in the driveway with pepper spray instead of a loaded gun? And I said, it's very simple answer to that question. There's houses on both sides of me and right across the street from me. Number one, my eyesight's not so great in the dark. But number two, even if he was right in front of me and I shot him, if God forbid I missed him, it would go right into the house across the street. I'm not going to be responsible for somebody else.
See, that's where, you know, gas rounds or, you know, birdshot, that type of stuff. Like,
well, yeah, no, a pistol was out of the question because the bullet goes too far. So we had pistols, but we weren't going to use them. That was in the house only. So many people recommended shotguns. We had shotguns. Everyone had a preference for what kind of load we should have in it. I had an experience once where I went out the front door with pepper spray just because that's where I was. I was up in the office in the front of the house with Tony, and something was going on outside. So I ran out there with pepper spray. And at the time, we did not know it. The sheriffs were coming from different angles. Four of them were coming.
They were
on the house. And you've been trying to catch this guy for I don't know how many weeks.
You nailed one of the
shows? I came as close as you can come.
He came so close.
And he was easily the greatest deputy.
He was. We loved him. He was like great. And Steve just almost nailed
him. So I saw movement on the side of the house, and I said, I finally have the little bastards. And I went ahead and running for the side. And it was like, as I'm approaching, I know it isn't the stalker, because we have a pretty good idea of his build and how tall he is and everything. And this guy was wearing glasses, and the stalker did not wear glasses, but I was still going to spray him. And I came up there, and it was the kind of spray that stains you and dyes your body. Right. And just at the last instant, he put up his hands, and he was saying, Steve, Steve. And I stopped. But when you go through that thing where you're locked in, like for a moment, you really wanted to just get this guy, you could never go outside with a gun then. I couldn't go outside with a gun because, you know, what would have happened?
Now, let me ask you this. Like, did that ever come up with these guys that were coming to help you guys out? Like, the sheriffs? Like, did you ever say, hey, you know, just so you guys know, you know, maybe help us out. Like, we got shotguns here, so we don't lay one of you guys out. Like, did you guys ever talk about that? Or
we did talk
about
guns.
Deputies did not talk about it.
No, but I did tell the detective. Yes.
They said, you know, it's fair game. If you catch him any which way you can,
On your property,
you are free to use whatever force that you think is necessary.
And they did.
To protect yourself. And they encouraged it. They didn't encourage firearms, but they encouraged us to
Well, no, because like, I mean, unless he's inside, it's
right.
a lot more, you know, gray
problematic.
Area.
Yes.
Yeah. Ugh, fuck.
And Morgan,
saying, like, this is I have a personal issue with this because like I've had an incident here once, and it was I always tell it from the end. In the end, it was just a mistake, but in the moment, I mean, I have a gun at the back of a guy's head, you know, freaking out. You know, I'm not really sure what's going to happen. In this case, like, I mean, not to scrutinize how you guys handled it, but like, I mean, I would have had, you know, as many shotguns as I could get, you know, non-lethal rounds, something, you know, and then at least, you know, let everybody around you know, like, hey, you know, if you're going to be creeping up, you need to let us know somehow who you are. That way, you know, you don't get laid out by a, you know, beanbag round or gas round or, you know, something like that. That's how I would have played that. But
and I, at this point in time, I agree with that 100%.
Well, obviously, if we could do it all over again, it would be
we
completely
made
different.
So many mistakes.
So like, there was no point where, like, from start to finish, the mentality was this will end at some point.
Oh, without a doubt. Yep. It's just going to end.
Until 2 days before.
We need more cameras. We need more pictures.
He kept saying more cameras, more pictures. Her sister from California was calling every day that last week and begging me and crying over the phone and talking to Morgan on the phone and me on the phone and begging her to leave, just begging her to come to her apartment. She did not want her there. She knew something bad was going to happen. And Morgan kept saying, no, I'm not leaving my puppy, because she couldn't bring the puppy to the apartment. And I kept promising her I'd
you
take
know what?
Care
I,
of the
I read
puppy.
That, I read that in the blog and I'm like, take the puppy with you, but go.
Yeah.
Like, well, wasn't there ever like a relocation idea with you guys? Or
well, yeah, no. Then we decided that
maybe
we were gonna move.
Maybe not all of you, but at least her for a while.
Now, for like the 3 months, 4 months isn't really that long.
No,
of
it's
time
not.
In
that's
the
true.
World of stalking. For the first, like, I'm going to say 3 months easy. Morgan was dead set against leaving. She was not going to leave because he was going to follow her. There was a good chance that he would just show up. So if I go somewhere, maybe I bought myself a month of quiet or 2 months or 3 months or 4 months, and then when he shows up, it's going to be worse than it is now. Let's just end it right now so I can get on with my life. Sure.
And that's exactly how she verbalized it to us.
So what happened was,
you can't really argue with that either, because you're like, if you're still sitting there going like, you know what, she might be right. Like, it's gonna be over.
Yeah.
You know?
It made perfect sense. It really did, and obviously it was wrong. And
it was.
As 4 months came to an end, I said, "This is going on." It was supposed to end with the winter. You know, he's this stalker is a summer creature, and he's going to end. It'll be over.
That was the sheriff's came up with that idea.
And we just decided to move.
Yeah, because winter coats don't exist in
right,
black.
Right, exactly.
Assholes.
Yeah. So our new plan of defense was to move into a place, and we had a place picked out where
we had checked out 4 places, decided on one.
You know, there was no way all the windows were second story. There was nothing ground floor on this. This was a unit above a commercial deal.
All right, okay.
And so there was really, you came up the elevator. It was really a job to get up there to do anything. It was really safe. We were looking at things from a defensive posture, and it was really
high ground.
Something that we could defend easily. So, and it, we just didn't get there.
So that was one thing that was going on, was the fact that week, you know, that we pretty much had decided where we were moving. Also, we didn't know until recently that the detective that was on Morgan's case had interviewed the father of the girl that was involved, that we believe was involved. And
nice catch.
I know, thank you. That was 3 houses down from us. And told him at the time that the following week, the following Tuesday, they were going to have the guy's hours. They were going to overlay it over my timeline. And that our daughter, Morgan, was coming in for an official interview that same day, too. Now, our daughter, Morgan, on Friday afternoon, I guess, was due to leave to go babysit the military family's children for 3 days, just like she had done in the past in Frisco. So she was going to be gone until Monday, and then she was having her interview Tuesday. So those are 2 reasons we're moving. She's having an interview. Now 3 reasons. His hours are getting taken on Tuesday, too, you know, picked up on Tuesday. And there was one more. I forgot one more. But all 4 of them individually would have been bad enough. You know, would have had this person going, okay, maybe I got to get rid of Morgan at this point, you know? And so we have 4 things that we're looking at here that we don't know. We don't know what kicked it over? What made him kill her? We had no clue he was going to kill her. It was bad enough, the horrific stalking and thinking that our daughter was in danger all the time and she might get raped. I had no clue he was going to kill her. And the other thing is, the sheriff, Lou Valerio, he comes out on CBS Channel 4 on the lawn. He comes out there and says, my officers were out there over 50 times and we never saw a stalker. Well, guess what? Do you think the stalker is going to sit on the corner, on the curb and say, here I am, by the time the officers get
okay,
there?
Okay, I thought about this a minute ago. Like, did they ever, like, just post somebody up, like, you know,
no.
plain clothes? Or, like, why not? Why wouldn't they do that?
There was never a stakeout. Always going to be a stakeout, and two detectives came for a stakeout, and they called it after a half hour.
It was an hour and a half, I think.
What time?
I think I'm going to say about 9:30 they started.
Or maybe it was 10.
And so I got to tell you, this is pathetic, because one of the officers in the stakeout was caught on our video surveillance, and he's wearing a sheriff jacket, which is glow-in-the-dark, and it says sheriff on the back. He's texting on his phone, so every time he pushes his phone, it lights up his face. Until he turned around, we didn't know he was a sheriff's officer. We thought...
Yeah, I think
there's
those
someone
pictures
on the
are on
side
the blog,
of the house.
Right? Yeah, I've seen that.
I don't know if that one made it.
Probably didn't.
Kind of embarrassing for them, but anyway, that was the stakeout. There was no mistaking who
Sorry.
He was and where he was.
You just said something that made me think of something. Like, if this, what do you mean that didn't make it?
We have a lot of video.
There's all kinds of video.
Why
wouldn't it
blog?
Be out there?
We just have not even had the time to do it. You don't even know what it's been like doing the blog and doing everything we've been doing and trying to put together her case. We actually almost have her case completely put together so we can lay it on law enforcement.
Right.
That's what we need to do. So we're not the first parents that have gone through this. I've been hearing from parents all over the place that have gone through this for 20, 30 years.
There's a reason when you hear about it that
oh
it takes
my
them
gosh.
12 years. To get justice for their daughter. I can see now why it takes
yeah
that
you know what that's a good point, because you do see that on the news a lot, like, you know, cold case and, you know, all that mm-hmm. type of stuff. It's like, you know, I guess a lot of times, you know, some of that stuff just, you know, either they don't want to spend the resource or whatever it is.
They put up the blue wall. They won't give us anything. Everything is a fight to get. You know, right now we're working out filing subpoenas to get paperwork that they should just hand us.
That's a ridiculous
thing.
Yeah,
and it'll take 6 months just to get it. It's ridiculous.
I think we got a pretty good framework of what was going on. Mm-hmm. Was there any actual like a physical contact before the incident?
None that we know of. None.
That we know of. No.
Okay.
No,
so
I'm going to throw in one thing. When we first got the wildlife camera hung it on the front of the house.
Oh.
That night there was a stalking incident. And these are pictures that are on the blog, and they're probably the most borrowed, copyrighted photos off of the blog. I see them all over the internet. And the series of pictures is, at the end of everything, there's one sheriff's deputy leaving our house who gets caught on the wildlife camera. And then there's a pair of them walking out of the house. And then... You know, because of
real quick, let's clear up what a wildlife camera is. Like, it's a motion sensor still shot camera, right?
Right. Takes one
so
picture every
flash,
so often.
Or no? Okay,
it's
explain.
Not
it,
a flash,
maybe I don't know.
It's infrared. It's easy to explain.
Action.
It's a camera, senses the motion, warms up. It takes it a little bit of time. Okay, so now 5 or 10 seconds later, if it was instant, it'd be so much better. But it warms up, and then you get a big red glow. And then you get an image. So if somebody knows what it is, and the stalker was a trophy hunter, and he knew wildlife cameras well, so right after all the deputies, they're not even down the block, the three deputies that are leaving, you can see the taillights of one of them in the picture of him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's leaning against the front of my truck.
Them go.
He absolutely did not care. It was excitement for him to hide from the sheriffs.
Do you think, like was there... time in the day where he could just kind of like be at the house, like
yes.
checking stuff out.
Yeah.
Do you think he went and just like kind of looked to see how it worked and all
people,
that?
Without
stuff,
a doubt.
People
yeah.
believe, okay. and now we believe that he was in the house during the day too.
I mean, it's just I tell people now that one of the traits of a stalker is to violate your life, infiltrate your life, to get into your life. So
and
if
I had
you
no
think
idea.
They're not in your house, you're kidding yourself. They
right.
are in your house. A gentleman that we were talking to that lives locally here. I was telling him about the, you know, the police saw no sign of forced entry, so they're really thinking he didn't get in the house. And he said, "You got to be kidding me." He brought me over to the neighborhood, and I know the neighbor to our house. I took care of his house back then. And he went around to two of his doors, and within minutes, he was inside his house without
a
mark.
No sign.
Right. Okay. My own question, why not, like, actual surveillance cameras?
That first, we had wildlife cameras. Then we moved up to surveillance cameras at 24/7. There were six of them around the house that took video.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we could...
And he was constantly moving them.
Do you think after that, like, he saw that you guys were ramping things up and so he kind of backed off a little bit? Or
you know, mm-hmm. back then, and then another huge mistake, don't ever do this, but I thought I had created like a force field around the house with those wildlife, with the video surveillance. I thought that we were kind of safe because we never saw him right around the house anymore. So he wouldn't come in the house. He wouldn't get close to the house. He wasn't peeking in our windows anymore. I thought I had done something, but I really hadn't. Yeah, I think
you made a little bit of a barrier, but not
good enough. Yeah, we found out later he was up on the roof.
What?
He got up on the roof. There was a tree right up against the back of our house that was, you can climb up within seconds. I mean, it was like a ladder, and we didn't even realize it. And this is the terrible part. This is how stupid I feel. We have a gutter that went all the way around the house, and that gutter right there where he'd have to put his foot to climb up onto the roof right there, that gutter actually broke off from being, you know, stress cracked for so long. It actually broke off and fell to the ground. And we thought, okay, it was just old and whatever. So he cut it off and we did whatever to it. But then months after Morgan had been killed, somebody gave us a clue to look up on the roof.
It was just a tip. And they said, "Have you ever looked on the roof?" And I said, "No." And they said, "When you get home," we weren't even home, "when you get back to the house, go look on the roof." So we got back to Colorado. First thing I did was go out in the backyard, and I was with a younger guy that works for me, and I said, "Here's a good tree to climb up, you know, why don't you try it?" So he went right up the tree, and then I went right up. I'm 57 years old. I am not in good shape. I went right up the tree, first try. And we walked around the roof, and I said, "Do you think you could walk on this roof without making a noise? Because, you know, it's shingles, and they squeak." Yeah. And he was able to. He was able to walk slowly, pick his way, made no noise. I was walking right behind him. You couldn't hear him. So we looked over the whole roof. We come across this place where up on top of the roof, it kind of dips down, and there's a place where a person could just lie. It was perfectly made to conceal a person lying on the top of the roof. Policemen from the ground could have never seen this person if they were up there. Then we go over to Morgan's side of the house, and right over her window, there's a gutter that someone has been doing this with, bending it out, bending it back, bending it out, bending it back. I mean, I'm a metal guy. It went on for a long time, and it's just ripped all the way down. And I walked around the entire subdivision, and that is the only section of gutter that has that tear in it, is centered right over her window. So it's, you know, and then we brought our grandson, our oldest grandson, who's 12 years old, over to the house to make a video for the blog. And I said, "Okay, you've never tried this tree before. This is what you're going to do. I'm going to say take. You come over, climb up the tree." Boom. He came over and in seconds climbed up the tree and was on top of the roof. Didn't make a noise. So it was a piece of cake. It was a simple thing for him to do.
And the awful thing was, while the stalking was going on, at night after we turn off the lights, I'd be in the master bedroom, which was at the back end of the house, and she was at the front end of the house. And I would hear a noise up on the roof, and I'd get up, and I'd go to the bathroom, and I'd go into the toilet area, and I'd turn on the light. And right when I turn on the light, the scraping would stop, like right over where the toilet was. And I went, "Oh, this is really creepy." And I turn off the light and I'd leave the bathroom and I'd come back to bed and I'd tell him, and he'd say, "Oh, there's just birds on the roof or squirrels or something, you know, or whatever." And we never, ever thought to check the roof. And now after all is said and done, and we know that he was up on the roof, and I did that in the blog, I actually had a police officer from Canada actually write in to me and say, "Thank you so much for that blog and telling me about the roof, because I head up this department here and I have never told my officers to look up on the roof. And now guess what? My officers are always looking up on that roof." So, I mean, I think all the mistakes we're making, people, by putting them in the blog, people are taking them and learning from them and actually doing good with them. But it is very painful day in and day out to write this stuff and to you know, get out there and say, look what we did. We messed up. I mean, it's just so gut-wrenching.
I mean, I understand that. Yeah. I mean, there's some definite, like, you know, internal feeling about, like, you know, what you did right, what you did wrong, and all that kind of stuff. But, like, that is a strange idea, like, to think vertically when, you know, you guys are living down here, you know, that I don't think that was that big of an oversight, you know? I mean, in hindsight, when you know, or when you think that this is what happened.
No, realistically it wasn't, but it pains us to think that we weren't that aware, that we couldn't think of it.
Because we could have caught him.
You know,
like in a complete, you know, like in a complete bubble of the house and all that kind of stuff.
Right, because we could have caught him for sure.
What do you guys think happened?
We believe she was horrifically stalked. So were
I,
we
no, I believe 100% that she was.
And then we believe that a stranger did not just happen to walk into the house that night and kill her. She definitely did not commit suicide. She was not suicidal at all.
Well, no, what happened, though?
We believe that he came in the house. No forced entry. He came in the house. There's multiple ways. We've got probably 6 ways he could have gotten into the house. And he got into the house, and I believe she was sleeping. She was exhausted that night when she got home. She was sleeping. The puppy was sleeping. The cat was sleeping. The cat hides in the closet. You never even see the cat. And I believe that he put something over her face, like chloroform or something, to make sure she stayed asleep. And I believe that he injected her with liquid amitriptyline, because there were no pills or pill fragments found in her stomach. And later on, 8 months later, when the forensic pathologist actually did a second test, a new test of the gastric fluid to make sure, you know, that because he wanted to change it to a suicide, so he wanted to make sure that there was still amitriptyline in her stomach, and he did that. There were 5 date rape drugs in her stomach, and the metabolites that go along with them or whatever, and there were no pills or no fragments still in her stomach. And so, and because they were still in her stomach, and 2 of them had the same composition as the amitriptyline in her bloodstream, but they hadn't gone over to her bloodstream, so that was a big clue right there that they hadn't gone over. She did not commit suicide, and it's very obvious from her blood and her...
Okay, so you're saying that, but, like, how could they frame it as a suicide?
I think he framed it as a suicide, and he was hoping it was going to be a suicide from day one, because they were spreading the rumor from day one that it was a suicide, even though the pathologist had put down natural causes, because...
Why would they do it? Why were they trying to frame it as a suicide? And how could they? Why would they, and how could they?
Because they had put the stuff in her stomach that never went into her bloodstream, and that they were trying to make her look like a druggie, that she took all these different drugs that she didn't even have. She never had these drugs in her stomach. She never had them in the house, and they were in her stomach.
Now, there was something about there were prescriptions, though. No,
she had.
Morgan took no prescription drugs
at that time.
The sheriff's department at the death scene came in, and one or two of the officers just wandered around her room and the rest of the house, and asked me if I had any pills for Morgan. And I said, yeah, I keep her old prescriptions. I have them in my room. You want them?
He went and took the box out of his hutch.
Yeah, I gave him a couple bottles. They searched through her room. And I've told people this since this happened. I'm sure if you go into any middle-aged guy in America, or you go into their medicine cabinet, there's going to be some expired old medications in there. The coroner does not come in and just look at all the bottles they find in your house, and those are the pills you're taking.
But that's what they did. And
they check with the doctor. They check with the parents.
None of them were recent. They were all 2 years old.
It's such a problem now. It's such a problem now, though. Like, you know, old prescriptions and, you know, kids stealing pills and all that type of stuff. Like, that's, you know, that's what they do.
Yeah, so to end that, there was this awareness that you can't just leave prescription pills around.
So he had them.
So I put them in a box, and I taped them up. And then I would wait. Now you can bring them right back to the pharmacy and give them back. But a year and a half ago,
they
just started that.
They have a pill day.
A year and a half ago, you had to bring them to the hospital. They would have those collection days, and you probably see them in the paper.
I take all the pills I get.
Yeah.
So here we are, shocked, grieving parents. We just found our dead daughter, and they're asking us if there are any pills. I didn't go get any, but he went into our room and got them.
I don't want to ask this, but I just have to know. Like, how'd you find her?
I was the one that found her. I went into her. I woke up at like 5:30, 6. I'm not really sure exactly what time it was, but it was dark out, and I realized that she hadn't come to get me to let the puppy out, because she was scared to death ever since she saw that guy in the backyard. So she wouldn't let the puppy out.
How long was it between that and this?
What do you mean?
The guy that she saw.
in the backyard was within the last 10 days.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I she hadn't come to get me to let the puppy out. So I went straight into her room and I opened her door. I knocked on it and then opened it. And the puppy and the cat were in her bathroom with the light on. She never leaves the light on. Because number one, she never used to leave the light on. And number two, ever since she got the stalker, anytime she'd turn on the light and then turn it off, he would start the banging again. It would be like a signal to come. And so she would not turn on, she would dress in the dark. She would not turn on the light at night. So the puppy and the cat are in the bathroom with the light on. They're looking like totally disoriented. And Morgan's laying, I'm thinking she's laying asleep in bed. And so, and she's laying on the wrong side of the bed. She normally sleeps on the right side of the bed. She's completely on the left side of the bed, completely on her side. And the blanket's only pulled up, you know, halfway up her arm, and I could see her bare shoulder. And I go, what's, you know, I thought it was a little weird, but I had to get the puppy out, right? My brain's, I have to get the puppy out to go potty. So I call the puppy, she comes running, and I run out to the backyard, and I let the puppy go pee, bring her back in, bring her in the room, and then I realize that there's a poop, a puppy poop in the room, which the puppy doesn't ever poop in the room, you know, and it was dry. It was had been there for a while. And so I picked it up and I went and disposed of that. And then I came back in the room and I said, Morgan, aren't you going to say thank you? I let your puppy out and I cleaned up puppy poop. She didn't respond. So then I went, uh-oh. And I walked over to the bed. I went, what's wrong with this picture? Because now I'm realizing this is really wrong, this picture I'm seeing. And I walked over to her and I grab her shoulder, which is still warm. You know, it is exposed. But I grab her shoulder and I kind of shake her, mm-hmm. and she doesn't respond. So I start screaming for Steve, who's on the other end of the house. It's a long house. And so he comes running, and then he runs in the room, and he says, Morgan. And then he says, Tony, call 911. So I run into my office, and I call 911 while he starts CPR on Morgan. So I'm in the other room on the phone and running back and forth in between the bedrooms, you know, between the phone, because I couldn't get the phone. It was a landline, and I didn't have a remote. And so I was running back and forth between 911 and him giving her CPR. And then 911 said, does he have her on a hard surface? And I said, no, he has her on the bed on her back and he's giving her CPR. But and they said, well, get her on a hard surface. So I put down the phone, ran in there, and I grabbed her ankles. I said, Steve, get her on the floor with me. And he got the top of her. I got her ankles and we put her on the floor. And then he started CPR some more on the floor until the first responders got there, who were wonderful, by the way. They were great. And they were very upset.
The animals, like what?
That was the strange part. The cat disappeared into the closet, and Wyla,
the puppy just sat on the bed and watched.
Never made a sound.
And I've had this, many people ask, how could the dog not be barking? How could you not hear from the dog? It would have done something.
First responders running in, we had everything.
And
nothing.
I'm going to say I didn't want to think about it. I'm going to say, When we got to a medical point, you know, first the coroner said it was natural causes, but when we got to a point where we were visiting her doctor, and she said, this is not natural causes, this is a homicide. And she's a brilliant woman. So we believed her. She holds all the weight in the world to me.
Steve took it really hard, because for a father to believe that he was home and his daughter was murdered in his house is so horrific. It was just too much. His brain couldn't wrap itself around it. He couldn't do it.
Yeah, so.
Well, especially after all the work you put in. I mean, and then you also said you thought you made some headway. And now this goes down.
But 2 days before she was murdered, the detective was at our house, and I was the only one there. And he brought me out in the front yard, and he told me he believed it was going to escalate. Now, he didn't tell me why. He didn't tell me what I should do about it. He just said it was going to escalate. That was 2 days before she was murdered.
Like 3 or 4 months after her death, and by now we know that it wasn't natural causes, and it's being verified by other doctors. We talked to a really great friend of ours who's a retired investigator. And
for the federal government.
Yeah. And he's a pretty top-flight guy. And he sat down and walked through the death scene with me. He said, this is going to be really tough, but I'm going to walk through it with you. And I have questions. And he had a question about the dog. Why didn't the dog bark? And the way he was doing it, and the way I had time to think, and the way we were discussing back and forth, and the questions he was asking, I was coming up with, well, you know, when the first responders were there, there was 3 or 4 guys that were coming in with all their gear. And Wyla was just sitting there watching them. She wasn't barking at any of the the ambulance barked, driver or the guy with the... So, and he goes, well, there's your answer. And he walked us through so many things in the room. He said, what else was in there? Do you notice anything out of place? Do you close your eyes, go back to that room. And it was an amazing realization to go through and say, how could we not have known this? Like, her panic button was torn off. She had a little button so that if anything happened in her room, she could push it and a bell would ring in our room. And that was my signal to come running. And it was ripped off of its mount on the
floor underneath clothes.
So more testament to him being in the house or whatever, knowing about it.
By the time we got done with him, there was
he even went through the dozens. Suicide. He went through a whole suicide. He had a package of all these questions, and he went through all the suicide questions. He goes, she wasn't a suicide. I go, I know she wasn't. The morning we found her, we were told by the sheriffs and the first responders, no sign of suicide, no sign of breaking and entering, no sign of physical attack, which there was. We found out later that she was missing three.
Yeah.
She had broken these three nails. Were at an angle. And I thought that the pathologist just cut them for a sample under the nails, That's my brain. That's how my brain worked. And instead, he insisted he didn't touch her nails. I go, didn't you even take samples? He goes, no. And then I saw the KDNK actually gave me drawings that they got from the pathologist because the coroner won't give us anything. We haven't gotten anything. But I got it from KDNK, the one hand, and it has she has abrasions here and abrasions here on the drawing, and she has a burn mark here. And then I said, what was the burn mark from? Because she never had a burn mark. And then he gave me a kind of a clue what it might be.
And that is also from this investigator, and that is if you murder someone with drugs and they're playing possum, you don't know if they're dead. It's very common to take a cigarette and burn them. And if they don't move, then they are dead. Because you can't risk, if you're killing someone...
Was there a burn mark?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, you just said that. My bad.
Right there.
Yeah, no. I mean, there's so many signs of an intruder in a room. Her jewelry was missing.
Let me tell you this right now. I'm not going to talk about my thing because it's totally different and doesn't meld with this. I'll tell you guys more of the story later, but it just wouldn't make sense right now to talk about it. Basically what you're saying is that this whole thing, ever since it happened, they labeled it one thing. You guys both completely believe it's not what they said it was. Not natural causes, not suicide.
At the beginning, I thought I had some, maybe I had a 1% doubt, 2%, hard to say exactly what, but I believed what they said, and I believed there was going to be an investigation. And no one ever asked me a question after the day that her body left.
And I knew she didn't die of natural causes. She had a
She was what, 17?
She was 20.
20 years
old. Oh, 20,
old.
Okay.
She had just turned 20.
No, okay, people don't die of natural causes at 20, unless you have a heart angina or something like that.
And they couldn't find anything. I said, I kept asking the forensic pathologist, did you find anything with her organs? Did you find this? Did you find that? Nothing. He couldn't find anything.
Her doctor at UCLA was super upset.
She was so angry, and she was emailing him back and forth. Morgan was found with blood on her lip. She had a red mark on her forehead, which obviously didn't turn into a bruise because it happened before she died, and then she died. She was fully dressed. She wasn't dressed when she went to bed. She had her pajamas on. We never found her pajamas. They were gone. She was fully dressed.
What's that about?
Well, I'm going to guess what it's about, but I don't know it for a fact.
See, there's things we don't know.
It's hard to guess.
We don't know which opening he came into the house through, but he came in through one. There was someone in that room. There's too many things that are out of place that Morgan could not have done herself.
Right.
Absolutely. And doctors have told this more and more and more over the year and a half to where it's not even a question to us.
Some people say the amitriptyline that was in her blood that he said was insignificant. And then I said, how could it be insignificant? It's almost 8,000 nanograms. And I called the lab myself. And they're not really supposed to be giving out information to the family. They only go through the coroner. But I said, okay, hypothetically, if you have a person and has this amount in their blood, do you see that a lot? And they said, no, we do not. And so that was another red flag for me. And then I find out that the difference between the amitriptyline and the nortriptyline was a huge red flag because the pathologist kept saying, oh, well, she was probably just taking old amitriptyline and not telling you. And I said, no, she wasn't. She didn't take pills. She didn't believe in pills. She was completely against it.
So there's no, like, okay, this is a bit of an off the path question, mm-hmm. but, like, there's nobody, okay. none of her friends that would have been giving her
she antidepressants wouldn't have taken or any it, of that type of shit. She wouldn't have taken it, though.
It's if you knew Morgan, this would be so easy to understand.
Well, like well, yeah, you guys frame her like, you know, a real, you know, ray of light, you know.
Well, I can also say she had a marijuana permit. She did have a marijuana permit. And the only reason I'm saying that is because people say, well, she had a marijuana permit. She probably was a druggie. She was not a druggie. She did a marijuana permit because we talked
weed is not
into
a drug.
It.
Sorry.
Well,
shut up,
a
all
lot
people.
Of people
well,
think that.
I get it.
She took amitriptyline, it for, to stay off pills.
When she took it during her life, it was for headaches. She had
chronic
headaches. And she went to see a doctor, you know, kind of a holistic guy that was going to help her out because the express purpose to go to this doctor was to get off any prescription medication. She didn't want to have a medication that she could be taking her whole life. She was at that age.
Right.
I'm not going
to
do this.
Tell her what to do.
And so she went through hyperbaric chamber treatments, I think 30 of them, over a couple of months. It really helped her. She had a whole exercise regimen. She had a diet regimen. And she stopped taking any prescription meds. And then he said, you know, think about medical marijuana, and it wasn't even the smokable kind. It was
edibles. It was edibles.
And there were certain edibles that would help her headache.
Certain
and he
strains.
Said, here you go. This is my suggestion. And she didn't do it, but
she
had
did
the...
it once in a while. I mean,
Morgan was the kind
moon,
of person that would not even take marijuana if she didn't have the permit. So she got the permit in case she ever did, so it would be legal.
Right.
Morgan is the person that would be the designated driver.
Oh, Morgan, right. You goody two shoes.
She was the designated driver. She never stole a stick of gum in her.
All right, let me
my other two kids are not like that.
Our other two kids are not like that. Not like that at all.
My other two kids, no. I, you know, is if I got a call at 2:00, it was from the cops, you know.
Yeah.
So,
oh yeah, I always made sure that phone was on.
So I've had it both ways.
All right, let me. I do want to get to the blog a little bit, but I'm gonna start by framing where I'm at right now with this.
Okay.
I didn't know where you were at all. You're actually like surprisingly, well, not surprisingly, but like well, first of all, I didn't know you were gonna come, and I'm glad you did.
Okay. I appreciate
so,
that.
So thank you. But you, I mean, the fact that you're sitting here going like, I did this, I did this, I did this. We thought we got here. We fucked up, and obviously you're sad about that. I mean, like, obviously I shouldn't even have said that.
Yeah, you know? No, it destroys me.
But I mean, I didn't know where you were at with this whole thing. I told her I didn't want to watch Dr. Phil. I haven't read all the whole blog, you know, like, and I'll tell you why about that too.
Okay.
I didn't want to, you know, mess my judgment of this before we talked about it. Now I don't really know what to think, because the reason let me get into this part of it. The reason I stopped reading the blog, I and you know, no disrespect, I'm trying to be honest with you guys.
Please,
guys have been honest with me.
Please do.
I have a hard time with the editorial nature of the postings, and I can't be the only one.
No,
I mean,
you're
if
not the
you,
only one.
You're sitting here, you know, before we turn the mics on, you were saying that there's some, like, serious hate stuff, you know, hacker, terrorists, you know, anybody that's covering this, and apparently I'm going to be fodder for this, too.
That's right.
Bring it, bitch. okay, the gal I told you about, Rebecca, she is a huge follower of the blog. I want to say she did tell me where she sat with it, but to be honest, we haven't talked about it in months. Like, because I first contacted you like 6 months ago,
a long time ago,
maybe 9 months ago, which is fine. I'm just saying, we haven't really talked about it, and you know, she's like, you got to go look at it, you know. So I started looking at it. And I read probably, I don't know, 6 or 7 posts, and like, I started to feel like I don't really know what this is. I am all for, like, I believe that, you know, the cause for the blog and the Facebook pages and all that kind of stuff to raise awareness, you know, give pointers to people that are, you know, having issues with this shit. Like, obviously, noble. My hat's off to both of you. Can you tell me why it's not all, like, just completely factual and nothing else?
It's very evolutionary. We had no idea what we were doing.
Okay. In fairness, I haven't read it in months.
Okay.
So, good.
And we just kind of made it up as we went. Tony was the driving force. She will write most of the blogs. Sometimes it burns you out sometimes. Sometimes she's too emotional, and I say, okay, I'll write it. And then she'll take mine and edit it.
Once in a while, he jumps in and writes
one. Once in a while, I'll hop in and write one.
Is it separated or no?
It doesn't say Steve wrote this. Okay, yeah. Tony heavily edits it. If I get a whole idea down there, then she'll just take it and shift it into what she wants, and then she's happy with it, and then she runs with it. We didn't really know. It was kind of like a healing thing. We've talked with so many doctors about this, and they've all said, gosh, it must have been so healing to write that blog about your daughter and to write all that stuff, and it really was. It was for both of us. The little bit that I did, it was really helpful. And at the beginning, we got a lot of these comments that it was almost like a Blair Witch thing. Did this really happen? Are you just making this up?
Right.
And
not making it up, obviously, because there's a dead person.
Right.
Right. But to be honest, like I mean, Blair Witch isn't what I would have said, but like I was like all in. I'm like, because everybody loves a good suspense, especially if it's not, you know, maybe there's some injustice or whatever you want to call it. And I was like, I don't know what's happening.
So over a period, if you have to write each segment every day, and I watched Tony go through this, it's not like you sit down and you write the next 2 weeks. Every day she writes one segment, and you go through a kaleidoscope of emotions and life changes and things that are going on. We're on vacation. We're here. This just happened. We just got this news from a doctor that's, you know, blowing our minds. So the blog is subject to all these things that are going on in our life.
It's
so
a reflection.
So, you know, if we told you what was happening that week, then you'd go, oh, that makes perfect sense now that that's
happened. Well, no, and I'm subject to that direction. Too. You know, because, like, I mean, my life exists beyond this show. You guys know that.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, I've had shit shows. Well, why? Maybe because I got wasted the night before and I, you know, set something up for 9 in the morning and I was just terrible, you know? Okay, I wasn't going to bring this up, but now my framework is totally different. How did Dr. Phil bait and switch you guys? Because I didn't watch it. Like, how could he not listen to this and feel, you know, the wheels turn and, like, not be...
The one thing I'll tell you is we were a little bit shocked when we saw the show, actually saw it on television, because we...
Well, I'm going to back up a little bit. First of all, there's the pre-Dr. Phil where they're just talking about you.
That's what I was going to
say. And you might be on the show.
We just want to get your story out.
And yeah,
you.
And they were our pals. And then they literally called us at 10 o'clock at night on a Thursday and said, we have a flight for you tomorrow at DIA that takes off at 7 in the morning. And we said, do you realize we don't live near DIA? We're going to have to get up at 3 in the morning to make that flight. So fade in, fade out, we're out there for the show. Now, Keenan was going to be on the show. And we had been advised that if you get that guy on camera, on live video camera, and he says anything, it's worth, no matter what happens to you, it's worth being on the show. So we went to that show from the point of view that the number one suspect...
Wait, said your lawyer? Or said who?
Yeah.
No. What? Our lawyer?
Yeah. From counsel.
Said if you get anything on... tape.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Sorry.
He said basically only a fool would go on national TV
and
say anything, you know, a suspect.
Right.
Now, we were under a temporary restraining order at the time, filed by some of the people that were involved, and we had to go to a hearing so they could lift the restraining order so that we could be together on the stage for the show. So they were doing it, you know, and had we disagreed and said, no, we're not going to go along with this, then they couldn't have gone to the show. But we did, because we wanted someone to be on the show, whoever it was. And it was cute, because there's nothing cute about this whole thing, but during this hearing, it was announced that their lawyer was going to have to go with him, because in case there was criminal exposure, he would have to be there to shut it down. And you don't see it during the filming of Dr. Phil. He's 10 feet away.
He's
in case
in
something gets
row.
Out of hand or they start saying something wrong, he's there to shut it down. And I looked at our lawyer and I said, do you have to go with us?
Because who contacted who? Like, did they ask you, or how?
All the people on the blog have driven so much that's gone on. They all contacted Dr. Phil, and they called us, the people, the producers.
I never did.
Why the
The producers contacted us.
Okay, how about this? Why did you agree?
Because we were told by a stalking expert who's written 10 books on stalking that it doesn't matter how you get it out there, get it out there.
Get it out
because there. Because people need to know about this, and they need to know, and you need to get the investigation open. All we want is an investigation. We want real law enforcement agencies to look at this and look at all the facts and all the evidence and say one way or another who did what, when, and where. We want our daughter to have, you know, her say in court, even though she's no longer here.
Right.
So that's why we did it.
All right.
It's hard to understand.
It's not. I mean, the reason I ask is because I'm sitting here with you two and, you know, getting emotional and, you know, paperwork. And, I mean, you've confused me further. And I'll level with you guys 100% right now. And again, no disrespect, but, you know, I have my own brain,
it's
whatever.
It's confusing.
Coming into this thing, I'm 100% sure that there was harassment, stalking, all that, the lead-up stuff that you guys are talking about. I, through my own, you know, checking of things and, like, trying to dig a little bit, but not really focusing on your writings, had doubt that it was a murder.
Mm-hmm.
But not saying that I believe that. I never heard natural causes was one of the things. That's ridiculous.
8 months.
But I also was like, suicide. I don't know.
It was like,
and, well, you know, okay. No, fairness. I think I did think it was suicide. But, like, the way you guys frame it, like, then, you know, there's no. You know, you say there's no medications. Like, the way you talk about how she was, like, it doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. No, and in fact, there is a doctor.
Which doctor?
There's a doctor in Maryland who's, and this is all
forensic
through the blog.
Forensic toxicologist / pharmacologist.
So many people, mostly women,
say his name.
They read the blog. They want to help, and this particular person was a assistant in this office of this doctor, and she said, "Will you look at this case for these parents?" And you know, I'm sure the doctors think that, you know, I'm just going to verify what the locals said and put it these parents at ease.
Because he gets paid big bucks
to go to
court.
All he does is go around the country.
Is he considered an expert?
Yeah, he's a forensic.
Beyond, yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. He's one of the
big
ones.
So, yeah,
he's
high paid.
He
goes around the country, and he tells you what drugs do when people die and what they do after they die. That's all he testifies about, and that's all he does. So he reviewed all the stuff, and he wrote us back his opinion of what happened, and he was the first one that really put most of it all together. Combine him with someone else, and we sat down with the district attorney and explained to her what she said, and she looked at us and said, "Well, how can that happen? How could Morgan have done that?" And we said, "She didn't." She was killed.
Okay, so yeah, I told you my opinion of this going in. I have no fucking idea now. Because, like, the variable was you. I had no idea where you were at. I had no idea you were part of the actual blog. I sort of, like, in my own head, because I, you know, I like to make up backstories that probably don't exist. I kind of wondered, like, you know, is
he even going along with this thing? Or is she forcing him to do it?
No, not even that. But, like, is he being sort of, like, neutral, like, not really sure? And, you know, maybe as... As a pacifier,
right? No, I understand.
Allowing this to happen.
Exactly. Tony is the emotion. Yep. She's the driving force. She's the get out there and talk to people and tell people. I'm the researcher. I sit at home and I put together all the pieces and I try and make sense out of this for my daughter.
And you have to understand too, even up to the Dr. Phil show, he was so distraught and such a mess that he couldn't really say much. That's the problem. I mean, he would say stuff to me. He would do research. He would, you know,
you're going to make me cry. Stop it.
But yeah, he cries a lot. And I cry, but not in front of people as much.
Right.
No, so that's our...
So, okay, bottom line, 100% no doubt in your mind something fucked up happened.
Yes.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, yes. That's what we think.
Well, and not just the lead up, like the
and
the
it
death,
wasn't just
the
a
death.
Calm little
and
murder.
It's not
it was
just,
a horrific murder.
It was a horrific murder, and I can even talk about other things that happened that maybe we shouldn't on this show. But like one of the first responders saw a spray on her under the black light on her chest, right? And he wrote, he didn't test it. Didn't say anything, he just wrote it in his report. He wrote in his report, well, maybe it's something having to do with the first responders when they put the pads on you. Had nothing to do with the pads, it was a spray thing. And under a black light, it's saliva or another bodily fluid that would show up under...
Language.
I know. Under under the black light. So, I mean, it's
so
just...
So they're saying there's like a, maybe a sexual assault too?
But they're not saying it. They're
or
not
no,
saying anything.
Somebody,
they're not doing any testing. Other people are saying this,
somebody,
yes. Other people are saying this to me.
Yeah.
Other
she
implied.
Never had a rape kit done, and she was killed under suspicious circumstances. She had a sexual deviant stalker. How could you not
now,
do a rape kit?
Yeah, and one of the biggest components of her stalking at the beginning.
Now, hang on. She was cremated, right?
Yes.
And, oh boy, I could talk about that one too. Here we are in shock as parents. I'm in shock. I mean, I just kept going, where's the replay button? Where's the replay button? That's all I could think of in my head is, where's the stupid replay button so I can push it and we can go back to the day before she was murdered? And that's all I could think of. And, of course, our family came in from California, New York, Colorado, everywhere, all over Hawaii, everywhere they came in, and they just kind of converged on us. Well, in the meantime, that same day, the coroner's office, the Farnham Holt, the funeral home is calling, and they're asking about what do we want to do with Morgan. Now they have her body back. It went straight to Grand Junction, had an autopsy, and I'm saying it because Morgan's soul isn't in her body anymore at that point, and then her body is now at Farnham Holt. Do I want it to go to Farnham Holt? Do I want it to go somewhere else? I said, I don't really care at this point. What is the closest funeral home? I didn't care. I didn't know. I didn't think. And on their cards, they have the deputy coroner and the manager of Farnham Holt all on the same card. And that's what they had handed us. And so I didn't know. And I just said, sure. And so then the next day, they're already calling me saying, is she going to be cremated or buried? We need to know right now because we need to know whether
we had to make a decision. That's what they told us.
And I said, well, isn't this a criminal investigation?
Isn't
don't
it weird? Like,
her
okay,
body?
Let me interject here. You really don't know how shit goes until you go through it.
No.
I've had a little bit of legal trouble, let's just say. And when you've never had legal trouble, you think because you were a kid and they told you that, you know, police protect you.
Right.
The justice system is the justice system, not, you know, the money-generating system for, you know, half-ass criminals. You think that, like, if you didn't do it, hey, this is going to work out.
That's okay.
this is going to work out because, you know, this is America.
You had faith.
You
trusted.
Exactly, yeah.
You trust the legal system.
To the point where I had somebody go, like, say you were here. Fuck it. I'll say you were with me. And I'm like, nah, stupid for me. If I would have just said I was with him, and he goes, and he's with me.
If you would have just lied.
If I would have, like what happened. Like the reason I was in the situation was a lie. Had I lied again, I never would have went through what I went through. And how weird is that? That like, you don't know that, you know.
You don't.
Like you don't have to make a decision like that. You don't.
No. So we called the detective.
Don't like. Yeah, I'd be like,
but that's
put her in a huge
day
cooler and bring her to the house because I'm not making that decision right now. How long are we talking about?
We had no idea.
It's probably 36 hours.
Friday morning.
What?
No, I found her Friday morning. They took her away by noon that day. It took 2 hours to do the autopsy, and then she was taken away to the funeral home.
And then
36 hours
five.
Between.
And time of death
and cremation.
Yes, and I was asking
Holy
the detective,
shit.
Is it okay to cremate Morgan? That was her wish. We knew that she wanted to be cremated.
But we wanted to make
and
sure.
And he said, we're absolutely done. There's nothing else to be learned.
It doesn't matter.
You're fine.
We have her samples, everything.
We have everything we need.
You can have her cremated. And I said, what
now,
about her room? You have crime
doctors across
tape.
This country who know what they're doing
would never
have said, well, okay, we can't do anything about that. That was a big mistake. The doctors have told us, the doctor in California, he said there's signs of strangulation that don't even show up for 24 hours.
Right.
And they've already
what do they call that, levity and like...
you've already missed that window. You've already lost it.
You've sent them off to the...
All right, hang on. You guys are fucking totally throwing me for a loop here. 1 hour and 20 minutes. This is getting super heavy.
The blog was evolutionary, and when I started the blog, it was first to show people...
Look at her picking up where we left off.
...through Morgan's photography, who she was and what she was about. And then I segued into...
What's the closest way for her to have perspective on the blog, right? I mean,
well,
now that she's not here, like that's her.
Yeah, I wanted it to be her. I wanted it to be through her eyes and what was going on and what she saw and the beauty in the world and what kind of person she was, so people could understand. And then I wanted it to slowly go into the actual stalking. And I took the actual blogs, the stalking information from her text messages, from my text messages, from emails, from the officers, from my timeline, anything I had in black and white, I tried to take that and put that in there so it was all honest and true. And I also used her pictures, and I also, you know, put in anything I could to show what kind of person she was and her friends coming over and this and that and the other thing, just so that you could see on a day-to-day basis what life was really like, and that he was running out buying cameras. She's thinking he's getting a little extreme here. Maybe we could do this. Maybe we could do that. She's believing the officers just like I'm believing the officers. They're telling us that they've never seen parents go to these extremes before, you know, but then they're also telling, and then it's interesting because after I started the blog too, what I didn't expect to have happen was I had people from the subdivision across from us write into me and tell me the description of the stalker that they had at their house tapping on their windows that they saw and how they made sheriff's reports to Garfield County, and we were never told about them, starting 4 years before, up to 2 weeks before Morgan's stalking started. That's bad. The community needs to know. There needs to be community awareness. There needs to be alerts. The police, if they do not have enough money to have enough officers on the ground, they can at least have citizens that are close by on the ground with their eyes and their ears, and they know that they're looking for something, and they can report it. Just like this woman reported, she asked all the people on the soccer field about the other moms about this person, and then had her husband go over there. If it wasn't for her doing that, that would never have happened. If the police or the sheriffs or any law enforcement agency could use community involvement, and they could let the community know there's a person burying himself to children on the roads, or there's somebody doing this, or there's somebody doing that, they could all keep their eyes open, and they can call in when there's something going on. And it would help immensely if they don't have the number of feet on the ground to do this.
I do kind of want to put a bow on this thing, because it's weird. I'm in a weird spot right now, you know. To be honest, like, I was, you know, I can't remember if I said this on mic a minute ago, but like, I wasn't sure, but I was pretty much thinking no chance at a murder.
Right.
I mean, obviously, like, I think that somebody was in the house, all that stuff. I still don't know, like, the logistics of what happened to her. So, like, I can't go like, oh, you guys are totally right, you know?
No.
And
I think you have to question.
You do. Well, yeah. You seriously.
We did not question it enough.
No, we didn't.
Well, okay.
The one thing that was said on Dr. Phil that her cousin said was completely correct. No one may ever know exactly what happened in that room that night, because no one was in that room with her except for the puppy and the cat, right? And they can't talk. But the thing is, I think the body, her blood sample, her gastric fluid sample, all those things, the things missing out of her room, the way things were, I think all that stuff is going to tell a story. So it will tell a story, and it will show you some things that happened. Maybe not all the things that happened, like the spray on her chest was never checked. We don't know what it was.
Right.
The thing on her head was never even mentioned. The blood on her lip. I mean, you know, her nails being ripped off, her abrasions. Nobody, you know, it all has to come together someday to show kind of a picture, but you're never going to see the whole entire picture because you weren't there.
Well, so let's talk about, like, we'll put the bow on it like this. Like, what's the blog for, like, in your head? Like,
there's two reasons for that blog. Originally, there was three. Originally, I started out, like I said, trying to show people who Morgan was before I segued into anything else. But now it's basically the last two reasons, which is to raise awareness and help other stalking victims, which we have and we still are. And that's our life's goal. I mean, that's never going to stop.
Yeah,
we can't bring Morgan back, but we can do that. And then the other part of it, the big part of this, is to get an investigation opened. We
and
feel like
where's that at? Do you guys
that's
going
to be up higher. It's not going to be Garfield County. The investigation has to get opened up higher, either with the CBI or the FBI or somebody. And we
is there any movement? Because I know you.
There is.
When you talked to me last, I want to say it was around November,
mm-hmm.
and I guess something was looking good, and you were like, "Hang on, you know, like we're working on something."
Yeah.
And
what? Well,
it moves very slow.
It moves really slow.
No.
It moves so slow. I mean, the coroner still has not to date given us anything. I mean, and you need that stuff. D.C., I've contacted the people in D.C., and they said, we need this stuff. And they gave me a list of stuff they need, and I haven't even gotten it yet.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Why the fuck, just for pacification, satisfaction, not just do it? Not just reopen it with somebody?
They won't.
Why? Is it a money issue?
That's a good question. Do you have an answer for that? I don't.
No, it just came to me. Like, why the just for the fucking
that question?
Like, you were saying you they had the expert come in and like he you said he could phone it in, you know, put you guys' mind at ease. Like, there's no way that there was foul play,
right.
Or something weird happened here, but we don't really know. He could have done that, and you guys might have been like, you might have taken it. Probably not. Not you two, I don't think. But why not? This is the part I don't understand.
Somebody has told us. She's a really bright woman. She's very good at what she does. And she said, you realize you're going to go up against this, and that is that this is something they've been doing for a long, long time, and that is half-assed jobs. Sweep it under the rug.
Multi-generational.
Do this, do that, get it on. You know, Garfield has really had no homicides for 5 years, except for now. I think there was a little incident up on Missouri Heights.
That was Eagle.
She said, if you allege the things you do and then you prove them, you could bankrupt the county.
Well, here's one thing. You guys probably know this. I'm hoping you can back me up. because if not, I'm going to sound like a total idiot. There's an abnormally high number of deaths ruled suicide.
Exactly.
Oh, here.
Yeah, we're double or triple, you know, any average.
Which it can be like, okay, this, I've said this a lot of times, like, this place can be kind of a vortex. You know, you think it's kind of like a paradise and all that kind of stuff, but you end up, like, if you move here and you don't have shit ready for you, like, you work your life away, you might get, like, one vacation and then, you know, your whole wad's blown. And, you know, if, you know, enough bad things happen in a row, you might want to kill yourself because it's fucking hard to live here. But you can't attribute all that to that or
no.
to, you know what I mean? Like, okay. Oh, you want this?
Yeah.
Okay. Hang on. You could have just said that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We're not trying to be radio friendly. We're just a podcast. Okay. We're not like live or
thank you.
Anything. So, okay. We
had a story from one investigator who's local here in the Valley. And they fished a body out of the Roaring Fork River, and I don't know how many years ago. It was over 10 or 15 years ago.
I don't know.
And Dr. Kurtzman did the autopsy, and it was ruled natural causes. He had a bullet in his head.
It's pretty natural.
Does that tell
if
you
a high-velocity piece of lead goes in your head, that's
right.
Naturally going to kill you.
Yeah. So,
no?
So I mean,
go ahead. Natural. Anyway, I just wondered if I could just read this article from Darcy because it was never printed in the Post Independent. I thought it was wrong that they didn't print it. And then people made a big deal out of the fact that, oh, she never wrote into the Post Independent. They would have printed it. But they did. She showed me the email where they rejected it. So I do know for a fact that they did not print it on purpose. But she said, as previously reported in both the Aspen Times and the Post Independent newspaper, Garfield County and Picken County in western Colorado both have...
Hang on. Just
sure.
For for the reasons that we're all running, or you guys are running into, that I might run into tomorrow, let me read this.
Okay, you read it. And that was right after Morgan was determined to be 8 months later after her death, a suicide. And she wrote that.
Do you want me to read the whole thing?
Yeah. I think it's good because she talks about the suicide and everything else rate in the county and what she thinks.
Okay. As previously reported in both the Aspen Times and the Post-Independent newspapers, Garfield County and Pitkin County in western Colorado both have an extremely high rate of suicide, in quotes, with Pitkin County at over three times the national average and Garfield County even higher. Yet both these superfluously ideal recreational Colorado counties show an almost non-existent rate of murder. Interesting. In fact, in the state of Colorado, more people die of suicide, quotes again, than they do by motor vehicle accidents or any other method. Many theories abound on why this rate is extremely high, but one logical theory is completely overlooked, that possible murders are being called, suicides by county coroners and law enforcement agencies without either the investigative skills or desire to fully investigate the death. Oof, Jesus. It often seems, and is the butt of many local jokes, that the only time a death will be termed a homicide in this valley is if there are 50 witnesses to point to a point-blank shooting or stabbing and a suspect stands holding his bloody hands out begging to be arrested. I haven't personally heard that joke, but... any other... I'll read this later. I mean, that kind of makes the point.
Yep. Same thing with runaways.
I don't even know where to go.
We
with
have
this.
More questions.
I think we should. Maybe we should do it again. What do you think?
We could do it.
Let's. Okay.
There's people.
Especially him. Uh-huh. Especially Steve. You've thrown a lot at me to where the fact that you were in my opinion, you know, just because I didn't know it, that you were like kind of non-existent, and not a voice as in part of this, made me wonder what she was doing. Maybe trying to, elongate her presence here, or, you know what I mean? Like kind of keep the memory going as long as she can.
Oh, I think those are all very natural things for people to think.
Absolutely. But I mean, one of the questions I had before all this information was like, what do you think about this? Now I know, like, you think exactly what she thinks about it. I think what you guys are doing is interesting. I don't really know. Like, the raising awareness is the noble, you know, spine to this whole thing. I don't really know what to make of all the rest of it quite yet, but I feel like it's just so much to talk about. Like, I can't form an opinion tonight.
No, the rest of it is just open.
We're learning. We're going to learn as we go. Yeah. A year from now, it'll morph into something process that doesn't exist right now.
Are you guys down for this ride?
You I mean, know, like, I know there people is, ask that question all the time.
Well, because you seem like, I mean, you guys have said that, you know, this is the most you've talked on an interview, and I'm flattered by that, and I'm happy about it, because, you know, I need exposure too, no matter what. But,
okay, like, bottom line is, no parent should have to go through this. And on one hand, I could say, I think we're completely nuts and we're destroying whatever life we have left by doing this. And on the other hand, I can say that we have to do this and we have to believe in our hearts that an investigation is going to get open and the facts are going to come out. And so then we can have a life.
Well, let me ask you this, okay? Well, you sort of answered it, but what if they open it again and... Like what do you want them to say?
We want them to say the truth. We want them to show us the proof that she either was...
No. Those are two different things. Because the truth in your head is murder.
Well, that's what people say. They say that the truth in my head, I'm never going to be happy unless it's the truth in my head. That's not true.
That's what I'm asking.
That is not true whatsoever.
So if they could prove to you that it was somehow accidental or something.
You would
accept that?
Yes, of course. Absolutely. But no one's shown us anything except for lies so far.
This is about nothing but closure.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, we have gone to at least a dozen doctors who are of some stature that have reviewed this, and you'd think out of a dozen, one of them would disagree, but all 12 have said This is a homicide.
And another forensic pathologist and a medical examiner and a forensic toxicologist slash pharmacologist.
I mean, people that are at the top of the food chain, the best of the best at a particular field, and they've all been unanimous. And you have to, at some point, you have to believe them all.
Mm-hmm.
I believe them.
And it's sad, but it's true. And so, yes, right, I just want closure. I do. I want somebody to investigate, really look at the camera pictures, really look at everything.
Again, sorry,
mm-hmm.
but this has nothing to do with, like, a glorified, like, we were right, she was murdered. Like, it has
nothing at all. Not at all.
All right.
You know, it's real simple. What do we tell the next girl?
Yeah, what do we tell the next girl that this happens to? And they just say she was a suicide or natural causes, and they can't find anything wrong with her, and they just bury her. What do we say? And it happens all the time. It's not an isolated case. And these stalkers, and there's a felony stalking case that was never closed. Nobody was ever arrested. That's a felony stalking case. And there's all kinds of laws in the state of Colorado that they didn't follow.
Yeah. I'm just going to cut it. Tell us where they can find everything.
Well, we have the website, and the blog is on the website. And the website is www.morganstalking.com with two S's. Or you can find it at www.morganingram.com. She also has a Facebook page, which is Morgan Stalking, and a Twitter account, which is Morgan Stalking, right?
Correct.
At Morgan Stalking. And,
no Instagram, sickos.
How does it work?
Huh?
How does it work?
No, I said no Instagram.
Oh,
sickos.
Okay. No.
No.
It was a bad joke. Sorry.
I don't know. I don't know
anything. Why wouldn't I ruin it right at the end?
I don't know anything about social media. I'm learning as I go.
I can help you. And if I can't, I know people that can.
Oh, good.
You guys were amazing. I I'm cutting this because I don't know where to go with it anymore. I'd have to reset, and maybe I'll have you guys over again and do it again.
Well, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. For me, gofromthere.podbean.com is the home site. You've got GFT Pod on Twitter, GFT Graham on Instagram. And if you can search Go From There, one word, on both iTunes and Stitcher, you can download, comment, subscribe, whatever you want to do. And apparently, because of the Farrah show, why not bring it around to something completely superficial? I'm going to be a partner channel on audioboo.com. So I haven't really figured that part out yet. I'm supposed to work on it tonight, so... Steve and Tony, man, you blew my mind. I have no idea what's going on anymore, but I appreciate it. Like, you know, the emotion, the candor, like, all of it. Great.
Thanks.
You're
so
welcome.
Much.
You're welcome, and thank you, too.
Holy shit.
Open doors so I walk inside. Close my eyes, find my place to hide. In the shake as I take it.
Need a cigarette.